Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
You can always tell when a place remembers you. Not just the way a memory does, soft and fading, but like a wound that never fully healed. It stings when you pass by. You feel the air shift, the weight settle on your shoulders, and you know the house is still watching. That's what it's like when I drive past the old family home, a three-story brick giant that stood longer than any of us. The mortar has turned the color of dried blood, and ivy crawls up its side like veins. Every window feels like an eye, still searching. But long before that house began to whisper to me, there was another visitor, one who didn't need walls or windows to find me. I was 8 years old the night I learned that death doesn't always mean goodbye, and it was a Tuesday, maybe Wednesday. Those days blur when you're that young. I remember the light, though, the kind that filters through blinds at sunset, turning everything gold before it gives up to gray. My father stood in the doorway, hands trembling just enough that I noticed. He told my sister and me to sit down. He said he had bad news. He didn't have to say the words. The moment I saw his face, I already knew. My grandmother, the woman who smelled of cinnamon and roses, who hummed hymns while she sewed, was gone. She'd been sick for months. Cancer, they said. I didn't understand the science of it. I only knew it was stealing her piece by piece. We'd stopped visiting near the end. My parents said she didn't want us to see her like that, but I felt her fading anyway. I'd wake in the night, certain something had shifted, that some invisible thread between us had snapped. When my father finally said the words out loud, the room felt too still. The sound of the refrigerator, the ticking of the clock, everything stopped mattering. I just sat there, small and helpless, trying to imagine the world without her in it. Grief is strange for a child. Doesn't come all at once like it does for adults. It comes in waves, confusion first, then silence, then fear. I didn't want to sleep alone after that. The dark seemed too empty, too final. I started sleeping in my sister's room, pushing my small bed against hers, terrified of being left behind by everyone I loved. Weeks passed. The grown-ups stayed busy, bills, paperwork, condolences, they kept moving, as if motion itself could protect them from sorrow. But for me, time froze somewhere around the word gone. Then one night, it unfroze. I woke to a pale blue glow spilling across the room. My sister was still asleep beside me, breathing slow and steady. I sat up, rubbing my eyes, and there, framed in the window, stood my grandmother. She was as solid as anyone living. Her silver hair brushed her shoulders, her skin pale but not ghostly. She wore the same ivory gown I'd seen in the coffin, the one with the lace collar she loved so much. But her eyes weren't sad. They weren't joyful either. They were steady, as if she were studying me, memorizing every inch before letting go. I wanted to run to her, to speak, to tell her I missed her, but I couldn't move. Something inside me, not fear, but reverence, kept me still. When I finally managed to fumble for my sister's arm, the tears came. Not because I was frightened, but because I knew she couldn't stay. The moment the tears touched my cheek, she faded, dissolving into the same blue light that had brought her. The room went dark again, and all I could hear was my own heartbeat echoing in the quiet. I told my parents the next morning. They smiled, the way adults do when they don't want to argue with a child's grief. My mother said it was a dream. My father said Grandma was watching over me. Neither explanation felt right. It hadn't felt like a dream. It felt like goodbye, the kind that means something is ending but not entirely gone. I tucked the moment away where no one could touch it, and life carried me forward the way a river carries a leaf, steadily. And with no promise, it won't pull you under again. Years went by. The ache dulled, but it never disappeared. And sometimes when I visited the old house, the one that had belonged to my grandparents and generations before them, I'd feel her again. Not as a figure this time, but as a pressure in the air. a knowing, like a hand pressed gently between my shoulder blades. The house was older than anyone could remember, built sometime in the late 1800s when our town was a cluster of mills and muddy streets, its bricks hauled by wagon and set by hands that never got their names printed anywhere. My great-grandfather worked at one of those mills, hauling lumber and coal to keep the boilers hot. A sepia photograph shows him squinting against sun, sleeves rolled. The house behind him raw and new, the yard still a patchwork of ruts. When he died, the house passed to his son and then to my grandparents. And in that way, a building becomes more than walls. It becomes a container for everything a family refuses to let go of and everything it can't bear to hold. By the time I was a kid, it was already tired. Cracked plaster, sagging floors, wallpaper that peeled like sunburned skin. The staircase complained when you climbed it, the banister loose in its socket like a bad tooth. The kitchen smelled permanently of coffee and old wood, but what unsettled me wasn't the decay. It was the feeling that we were intruding. Every time I stepped inside through the front door, I felt watched. The air hung heavier, like the walls themselves were holding their breath. Even the light looked wrong, filtered and dim, as if the house swallowed brightness on purpose and left the rooms chewing on shadows. I loved my grandparents deeply, but being alone in that house terrified me. The shadows seemed to shift when no one looked. The stairway always felt one step too long. Even walking past the basement door made my stomach twist. The air that breathed up from the crack smelled like damp earth and iron, like the underside of a stone. I wasn't the only one. My sister clung to me in the hallway. My cousins refused to play upstairs and said the third floor landing made their ears ring. Even my father, who pretended not to believe in ghosts, never liked being there after dark. He would stand at the sink washing a cup and keep his back away from the open doorway without seeming to notice he was doing it, as if the habit was older than he was. The fear followed me into sleep, and that's where the house learned a new way to reach me. The dream started the same every time. I'd be standing in the front hall, the old transom window above the door glowing faintly from some unseen streetlight. My nose would start bleeding, warm drops pattering onto my wrist. Somewhere in the house, a voice called my name. Soft at first, then sharper. It had a strange quality, like it came through the walls the way water finds the easiest path through dirt. I'd move through the living room, where the furniture sat under white sheets like ghosts pretending to rest. The voice would echo again, this time from upstairs. I'd climb the staircase, dread and curiosity twisting together, the floorboards groaning with every step. At the top, the hallway stretched too long, lined with closed doors. My grandparents' bedroom was always at the end. The voice would call again, louder now, impatient, the way a kettle is impatient just before it screams. When I opened the bedroom door, the air was still and cold, the curtains unmoving, though I half expected to see them billow with some breath I couldn't see. The sound came from their closet. Every time I'd reach for the knob, every time I'd feel the hum of something alive waiting beyond it. And when I opened it, there was nothing, only darkness, not shadow, but absence, like the closet had no end. A black door into a blacker place, the kind of dark that feels like a thought someone decided not to finish. That's when I'd wake up, heart pounding, sometimes with a real trickle of blood under my nose. The kind of terror daylight doesn't erase so much as file down to a manageable edge. I had that dream for years. I told no one. How do you explain to people you love that there is a door inside you that opens into a space with no walls? You don't. You go to school, you do your homework, you help in the kitchen, and then one day my grandfather died, and the house moved closer again. We were sitting in my parents' kitchen, sorting through old photographs and letters, edges brittle, the ink gone to brown, and then to ghost. I mentioned almost casually that I'd been dreaming about the house again. My sister looked up sharply. What kind of dream? I told her. I expected a nod and a polite change of subject. Instead, her face drained of color. The closet, she whispered. And then, do you get the nosebleed too? Two people don't dream the same nightmare for 10 years by coincidence. We stared at each other the way you do when you're both listening for a sound you hope won't repeat. Neither of us said we were scared. We didn't need to. Then came the discovery. When my parents decided to renovate the house to prepare it for sale, they tore up the worn carpet in my grandparents' bedroom. Beneath it, the floor showed a faint rectangular outline, nails marking where something large had once been built. A walk-in closet. My mother had forgotten all about it. She said that when she was a little girl, the closet had been sealed off and turned into a smaller one. She never knew why. Maybe a structural issue, maybe water damage. But the way she said it, hesitant, searching, told me she didn't really remember. Or maybe the remembering didn't want her. When my sister and I heard that, we just stared at each other. No words. Whatever the dream was, memory, echo, haunting, it had been real enough to leave a mark in wood. We finished packing the house with a kind of careful hurry, the way you edge around a sleeping animal you aren't sure you can trust. I avoided the closet as long as I could and then opened it anyway. The hinge gave a small rasp like a throat cleared. Inside, it smelled like starch and cedar and something colder beneath, a faint metallic scent that made me think of old nails. The new back wall looked ordinary, but along the right side, my fingertips found a thin seam where paint overlapped a filled-in frame. A scar under paint. I pressed my palm against it and it felt colder than the air by a degree my skin understood, but my brain couldn't prove. After the house sold, I thought maybe it was over. The dream stopped. The nightmares faded. For the first time in years, I felt normal enough to believe normal might last. Until one night reminded me that you can sell a house, but you can't sell what follows you out of it. I was living back at my parents' newer place, a quiet suburban home with thin walls and a kitchen that backed right up to my bedroom. My bed sat against the wall we shared with the kitchen. If someone got up for a midnight snack, I could hear everything. That night I couldn't sleep. The house was silent except for the faint hum of the refrigerator and the occasional expansion click the air vents make when the temperature shifts. Then, clear as day, I heard the scrape of a chair on the kitchen tile. I froze. Then came the soft, rhythmic clink of metal against ceramic. A spoon stirring a cup. Slow. Steady. A sound so ordinary it shouldn't have been terrifying. But it was. Because there were no lights on. No footsteps, no voices. I told myself it was one of my parents, but I could see the kitchen doorway from my bed, and it was pitch black, not even the green blink of the microwave. After a few seconds, the stirring stopped. The silence that followed felt alive, the way the air in a room feels different after someone has just left it. Then faintly, the sound of footsteps on the stairs. One, two, three. They stopped halfway down, as if whoever made them remembered something and turned back without turning. I sat up, holding my breath. No one appeared. Eventually, I turned on the light and walked into the kitchen. The chairs were all tucked in, the counter spotless, no cups, no spoons. The only sound was the refrigerator humming like nothing had happened. The next morning, I asked if anyone had been up. Everyone said no. My mother swore she'd slept through the night. My father joked about mice, but mice don't stir tea. A few nights later, it happened again. The same sequence, same hour. This time I didn't move. I just listened. It was almost soothing now, the familiarity of it, like someone in another room repeating an old ritual that used to belong to us. And that scared me most of all. When you start making room for the strange, it takes the room. I tried experiments I never admitted out loud. I left a spoon on the table beside a plain white mug, a chair pulled out by inches. An invitation or a test? In the morning, the chair would be tucked again, the spoon where I'd left it. Once, a faint ring marked the tabletop where no cup had stood. When I pressed my palm over it, the wood warmed under my skin, as if my hand was the last temperature the ring had been waiting for. Sometimes I think that's what hauntings really are. Not punishment, not unfinished business in the dramatic sense, but love refusing to quit. The impression of living overlaid so many times in one place that the floor remembers the steps, Other times, I'm not so sure. The old house had been heavy with more than just her presence. There were corners that even she wouldn't have entered. My father once told a story, half drunk and half warning, about a man who boarded there in the early 1900s, a quiet tenant who rented the room beside the old closet. One night he vanished. His trunk stayed behind, the closet door jammed so hard it bruised the palm of the uncle who tried it. No one ever found him. A year later, they sealed the space off entirely. Maybe that was just family folklore, maybe not. But when I remember the void behind the closet door in my dream, I can't help wondering what was asked to stay in there and what finally learned how to get out. I started visiting the cemetery more often. Grief learns routes. Mine led past the newer headstones into the older section where names wear down into whispers and angels have lost their noses to weather. I'd bring a small thermos of tea and pour a little onto the ground by my grandmother's stone so the steam rose and vanished into a cold that did not care. I didn't ask for signs. I didn't bargain. I just stood there while heat became air and air became nothing I could see. Once, tucked against the base where the grass grows thinner, I found three white carnations bound by brown twine. That was her flower. She used to say carnations were honest and roses were show-offs unless you cut them short and put them in plain water. There was no card. I looked around at the emptiness of that hour and decided the flowers didn't need witnesses more than I did. Back home, the sounds tapered and then returned, the way a fever does when it wants you to know it can come back. On a quiet night, I woke to the sensation you get when someone is standing near the bed, space moving differently near your face, the air tasting sharper, then the smallest brush of cold across the top of my blanket, like a breath taken in and not let out. A word rose in my throat and stayed there. In the morning, there was a spoon on the counter I hadn't left out. I knew it immediately. One from the old house set, slightly bent at the handle and nicked near the bowl, the one my grandmother always called lucky for reasons she never explained. I washed it and put it back. That night I slid it under my pillow like a talisman. I fell asleep faster than I expected and dreamed nothing I could remember, just a sensation of being watched and not judged, weighed and not found wanting. The house still stands. Different owners now, they painted the brick white, they planted hydrangea and hung cheerful curtains that glow golden at dusk. The listing called it revitalized, as if you can uproot a feeling with new paint the way you can pull weeds. I've seen photos online. The rooms are bright and airy and staged with bowls of green apples as though color could keep old air from settling back into corners. The bones are the same. Bones remember. Every so often, I drive past, slow enough for the engine hum to drop a note. If the sun is at the right angle, I catch the third floor window glinting, and I slow more than I mean to. Once, I saw a figure. Not distinct, more like the suggestion of a person just behind the glass, pale as breath on a mirror. I told myself reflection does strange things at certain hours. I told myself that, and watched the hair rise on my arms anyway. I don't stop. There's nothing I could say to new owners that wouldn't sound like a curse disguised as neighborly advice. What would I tell them? Don't open doors you don't need to. Don't ignore the knock you hear only three times. Don't blame the cold on drafts and the smell of roses on the neighbor's garden. They'll learn what they need to learn or they won't. And the house will do what it has always done. Keep what it can, release what it must, and press the rest into whoever stands there long enough to listen. At home, I keep a small lamp on in the kitchen, not out of fear, not anymore. Feels like etiquette now. A light for whoever still visits, a path through the dark for someone who remembers where the mugs are kept and which chair sticks if you drag it the wrong way. Sometimes I wake just before dawn to that old, ordinary music, the faint scrape of a chair, the soft clink of a spoon against porcelain, and a pause that feels like a thought finishing. I don't always say her name. Names pull and anchor, and I don't want to do either. I whisper goodnight, even if the sky is just starting to turn. I think about the first time I saw her in blue light and how grief tried to teach me something I was too young to hear. I think about the sealed closet and the outline in the wood and the dream that wasn't only mine. And then I let the sounds be exactly what they have been all along. An old ritual returning to itself, a house remembering, a person on the other side of a wall doing the most ordinary human thing there is, stirring something warm in the dark because waking is the loneliest part. Maybe not every haunting means harm. Some are invitations to remember. Some are warnings that memory and place have rules we don't get to rewrite. And some are what they are simply because we were loved in a room where the walls learned our names. And that kind of lesson takes a long time to fade. Until whatever lingers finds its peace, I'll keep the light on. The chair will sit slightly out. The spoon will wait beside the white mug. If there's a night when no scrape follows, no stir, I'll know silence is a kind of answer too. But if there's a knock, soft, careful, three times, from the wall between the kitchen and my bed, I'll open my eyes and say what I should have said the moment the blue light found me. I remember. I hear you. And you don't have to drink your tea in the dark.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now, so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.